a first for me, my first ever studio guest, Gordon Taylor, talking about his book, Cometh the Man. We'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. Gordon, welcome to Lionheart Radio.
Thank you, Peter. I'd just like to say it's nice to be here. I always like to come up to Tannock. It's a beautiful place.
Okay, let's kick off. Would you like to tell us a wee bit about the book that you're promoting?
Yes, the book is the first part in a trilogy, and the publishers have been good enough to option the second and third parts. I mean, the first part starts in 1820s Northumberland, progresses across to South Africa, and comes back to Northumberland at the end of the book. It's basically a dynasty trilogy. The hero, if you'd like to call him that, in the first book is someone called Nathaniel Davidson. I suppose the name Nathaniel comes from my grandfather, because that was his name.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, without giving too much of the plot away...
I wouldn't want to do that.
No, it'd be nice if one or two people bought it. But the fact of the matter is that he has a falling out with his father, and goes to South Africa to make his fortune. And that's the basic premise of the book.
Oh, okay, you said that the central character is named after your grandfather. I'm just wondering, Northumberland, obviously this part of the world you know very well. Mm-hmm. Have you been to South Africa yourself?
I haven't actually. Everything was done via research,
okay.
Either by the net or also by books partly. I do like the writer Wilbur Smith, who mm-hmm. is South African. Enjoy things like his book Seventh Scroll and that series of books. So that's why that came into my mind. But apart from that, I'm afraid it was just dragged out of my imagination.
I just wondered whether Nathaniel might have been named after your grandfather, but was perhaps yourself in another guise.
Not really. I think Nathaniel... as a character is basically my grandfather as such, because he's someone with extreme perseverance. He's someone who is trustworthy, which my grandfather was well known in Newbiggin-by-the-Sea, where I come from. Was a miner, worked down the mines for nearly 50 years, and was a man wasted, really. He did his owned A-levels in German at 66, something which you mm-hmm. know, you wouldn't think. And so I based that character, I think, mainly on him.
Okay, so, just for the listener's benefit, I uh-huh. haven't had time to read the book yet, but so all I've read really is the blurb and had a wee peek at one or two pages. Mm-hmm. Nathaniel in the book is quite a well-off young man, isn't he?
He is. Obviously, we have a very, very famous author up here, Catherine Cookson, who used to take a look at the lower social orders, if you like. I decided that maybe it would be worth a look at some of the problems that were derived by some of the upper social orders. So he is quite a... He lives in a fictional estate called Thistleborough in North Northumberland.
Have you any particular ideas where that might be, roughly?
Absolutely.
Give us a hint
or
two.
It's actually based on Linden Hall Hotel, which is just outside of Morpeth. And if people mm-hmm. remember, if they've been there, I'm sure a lot of people have, the porticoes out the front, how that building is set off the road. It's a beautiful place, and I decided that was the place to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Now, I believe you've got a passage of the book that you've got kind of ready to read to us, is that
yes,
right?
Yes, we can. I mean, as long as your listeners don't want to fall asleep, we can
well,
go
just,
with that.
can you, before you start reading, just tell us where it's come to in the story, maybe?
Yes, I mean, essentially, Nathaniel joins forces with a gentleman called Christian Davenport to go to South Africa. They find a sea captain called Ebenezer Smith, who's happy to give them passage. And they're sailing at this point, I think, from Lisbon through to South Africa, and a storm is taking place at sea. And if we can wait 2 seconds while I just put my Michael Caine glasses on, we can do it.
They certainly look the part. Yes.
They look the part, good.
Not a lot of people knew that.
If I was a penny behind Mr. Caine in the bank, I'd be more than happy.
Okay, take it away.
Right. Rolling waves of 30 feet or more started crashing over the decks, smashing timbers as they hit. Nathaniel looked toward the helmsman lashed to the wheel, struggling to keep course, his knuckles white with the effort. With an ear-rupturing din, the stern rail shattered. A 3-foot section flew through the air and pierced the helmsman through his back. Its jagged point exited the man's chest and lodged in the spokes of the ship's wheel. His body slumped over but stayed upright, held by the lashings to the steering device. His chin rested between the handles of the wheel, the gargoyle face staring blankly into space. Two seamen rushed to the position and unhooked the man from the wooden circle. One of them replaced him and began fighting with it, trying to avoid the viscous blood, hands slipping constantly on the liquid. In spite of the bindings, all manner of items loosened and flew dangerously around the decks. Water kegs crashed against the rails and disappeared over the side, gone forever into the seething sea. It was a scene from hell, thought Nathaniel. The devil had visited the ship and was wreaking havoc. He believed he would die on the deck of the Lady Bamborough. All he could think of as he watched the scene played out before him was Thistleborough and Sally, the two things he held most dear in his heart. He judged that he might never see either one again. Despite his prayers to the contrary, the storm was building to a new level of fierceness. Waves of 50 feet or more, whipped up by hurricane-force winds, battered remorselessly into the ship. His clothes were saturated from the crashing surf, as well as the ceaseless rain which had begun just after the first crack of thunder. Shivering, he cowered down to avoid further soaking.
Okay, I think I can safely say that I'm really glad that I'm in the studio here now, and not on the deck of that ship.
Yes, it's... it is one of the more exciting parts of the book, although I'd like to think that all of it is exciting. It's a book which is, I would describe as sort of a historical adventure stroke romance dynasty trilogy.
Okay, and obviously you keep referring to it as a part, the first of a trilogy. If people go out and buy the book, will they feel at the end of this first book of the trilogy that it was a worthwhile read, or will they think, oh, no, I need to buy the other two books and I feel cheated because they're not published yet?
I would hope so.
The first one, you mean?
I have a number one fan in Northumberland, if you like, a lady who's been very kind to me called Frieda Brassington. And Frieda has mentioned to me the fact that it lends itself both to screenplay and to the further books being published. And as it happens, I'm involved with a gentleman called Simon Williams, who your listeners might remember as Captain James from Upstairs, Downstairs in the 1970s. And he's very...
Well, if they're the same age as me, then mate.
That's right. And he's very kindly read the book and given me a very, very good review of it. And he's an author himself, and he's also passed it on to director for possible look at screenplay as well. So hopefully there's some worthwhile there.
Mm-hmm, yeah, certainly. I mean, not just the feeling of the cold as you were reading there. I could. There's lots of visual images coming in there, and it's very, very filmic. Scene as you read it out there. I was thinking of what's the film I've just seen, Master and Commander.
Oh yes, yes, with Russell Crowe, is it?
No, with the I know who did. I know the music that they did for the bit where they cast him adrift to drown.
Mm-hmm.
And I normally have that disc with me, but I could have played it later, but I left that one at home today. It's Fantasia and a Theme by Thomas Tallis. Next week, perhaps. Anyway, where was I? What was I going to say? Obviously, I know, because we've been chatting, that this is not your first writing assignment. You've written or co-written or ghosted biography of...
Terry Miller.
Terry Miller, thank you. I was just trying to read the just to make sure I got the name right on the front, the front of the book. And you've also done lyrics for songs and that sort of thing.
Yes, I am the agent for Terry, who possibly, again, your listeners will remember, he won Hell's Kitchen on ITV and opened his restaurant Rockefeller's in Newcastle. In that guise as agent, I also managed to secure him a 4-part series on television called A Bite of History, which was on Tynties Television, dealing with historical cooking. Again, it's a historical theme, seems to go through everything I do. But Terry was cooking food which we would have eaten here in Roman times, and then Anglo-Saxon, and then Edwardian, and finally it was last generation, so things like tripe and that kind of thing.
Can I ask you a couple more questions? Yes. About the book? Cometh the Man is the title, and that's obviously slightly archaic language. Is that a quotation from something. Should I recognise it? Am I showing my ignorance here?
It comes from, I suppose, cometh the hour, cometh the man. But I think the point being is...
Explain a little bit.
Well, I don't know too much about that either, to be fair. But, you know, the reason I used cometh the man, that part, was because Nathaniel starts off at 16 years old and you know, becomes a man through the book. And that was the purpose behind cometh the man.
Yeah.
But I think also... I do remember that originally it was entitled In the Shadow of the Table, because it happens in South Africa, where he has his vineyard is in the shadow of Table Mountain. But my wife persuaded me that that probably wasn't the best thing to do, because it may get put in, they might think it's a DIY book, so...
it comes smacked more to me, sort of upstairs, downstairs, now, because in the 19th century, thinking about sort of butlers and tables and waiting at table and...
Well, and I was persuaded like that it wasn't the best title, so we did change it. But I have to say, if I may, Peter, one of the things about being a writer is that your family play an absolutely vital part in, you know, how, because you put yourself away for long periods of time and they have to leave you alone. And I have to say that both Linda, my wife, and Leslie, my daughter, have been absolutely incredibly supportive, apart from all of the cups of tea that they've had to make over the years. You know, it's very important to have that kind of support. And I have some friends, Roger, Ian, and Mike, who have also been, you know, they'll keep my feet on the ground if anybody can, so they've been very supportive as well.
Good. Okay, I know there was one other question I wanted to ask you about the book, and I've got it written down somewhere, and it's I was going to ask you, there it is, about the process of writing. I mean, we all know a certain writer who said, I have a vision for 7 books and it's going to be exactly like this all the way through. And I've known other writers, I've done some writing myself, mostly for stage, and I know my style is different. Can you describe the process?
Yes, I mean, I think the person that you're talking about is J.K. Rowling, and again, if I was a penny behind her in the book, I'd be delighted. The way that I actually approached it was, I have to say and be honest, Peter, the concentration level with me is very poor. And if I was to research first and then write a book, I probably would never get to the process of writing. So basically, I started simply by writing the book, you know, just sitting in front of a blank screen, starting it, and then allowing my the flow to just generate. And then if there were certain things that I needed to research, I did that as I went. If I'd done it a different way, I don't think the book would have been published, to be fair.
Mm-hmm. And did the characters in the book stay the same characters throughout? Or, I mean, obviously, you talked about Nathaniel growing up and maturing. Yeah. Obviously, there's the character development and maturation there. But did he suddenly do things that, actually, no, this, I'm writing about somebody who's taking control of his own book.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think that's what happens when you write. I mean, you write with a fixed idea in mind sometimes about a character, or at least I do, and then basically what happens is you pretty soon find out that the character will go, you know, it's a weird process. The character will take over a life of its own and just, you know, I suppose maturity in people as you go through life is, you know, we all change, and that's exactly what happens with the characters in my book. They change due to circumstances, due to time, whatever it is.
Okay, and is there anything else you'd like to say about the book, apart from go and buy a copy, which obviously we take
absolutely
that as read?
Yes, absolutely.
Anything else you want to say about why we should go and buy a copy?
I'm passionately proud of the North East. I love the North East. I mean, obviously I'm from here, but I have had the opportunity to look at a lot of places around the world, the United States, Holland, Belgium, Germany, France, you know, places like this. And I still come back to the point that I haven't seen anywhere as yet that compares with this part of the world. And that's why the book was set partially here and partially in South Africa, because I wanted to make sure that people got a feel for what the North East's about, and the people of the North East, because I think there is nobody in this world as friendly and as... You probably will disagree with me here. I can see you smiling, being an Edinburgh gentleman. But you have to speak as you find.
Well, absolutely. Okay. Gordon, thank you very, very much for being my first ever guest on the Oakwood Arts Show.